closer.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I am your host, Todd Conklin. Thank you for downloading and sticking us in your ears. But before we go on, let me tell you this. Get ready. This is no longer the Pre-Accident Podcast. This today is the Pre-Accident Toddcast. Yes, that's right. I'm calling it the Toddcast. Now, I've gotten lots of letters from you guys, all of you telling me this should be called the Toddcast. And to be really honest, it's super clever. And I totally appreciate it, and it's funny, and I'm smelling what you're stepping in, but I held it off. And the reason I held it off is because I wanted to wait until this podcast. I knew it was coming, but it was hard to sort of coordinate the interview, because this podcast features Todd Hone. And Todd and I have been friends for many, many years, and Todd are going to make a podcast, so I think this one should be called the Toddcast. And if I could get another Todd, we could have two out of three Todds agree. I'm Big Todd, he's Medium Todd, and someday if you're good, I'll let you listen to Little Todd. All of those things matter. Todd's a great guy. Todd is the Global Director of Workplace Health and Safety at Underwriters Laboratory at UL. And the reason I wanted to get Todd on, well, there's a couple reasons. One is, I bet you this isn't the only time we have him on, but one reason is because Underwriters Laboratory, at least the health and safety part that Todd is the global director of, is a not-for-profit organization that is really focusing not only on safety, like household safety, which you sort of think Underwriters Laboratory, anything with a cord on it has a UL label, that kind of safety, not industrial safety, hard hats and fall protection, but in fact the health part of health and safety. And he's really looked carefully at the relationship between health, a worker's health, and occupational safety. And I don't know if you know about this. I mean, I honestly wonder if you know. So that's why I wanted to talk to Todd. Now, this podcast is detailed, and there is a ton of information. All of it is really good. All of it is really interesting. I'll talk more to you after the podcast is over, because there's a lot of material in this, and I kind of want you to give it a listen. Todd's going to take us on a trip that's a little bit of a change in the way we scope this out. The other thing I should tell you is this isn't the Pre-Accident Podcast. This is the Toddcast. All people on this podcast are named Todd. See if you can determine the difference between which Todd is which. Enjoy, and we'll talk more as we get to the back end of this baby. Good luck. Okay, so we're off down the trail. So ultimately, the mic's your friend, and all that matters is they hear, and we'll kind of pass the mic back and forth. That'll be easy as pie. And basically, the first question we ought to probably roll out. Well, first of all, thanks for coming. It's great to have you. And why would we want to talk to you on this podcast? Who are you and what do you do? There's a really good starting place.
So I'm Todd Hone with Underwriters Laboratories, UL, and I work for our organization as a not-for-profit. UL is a company that's been in business for 120 years. The last 3 years, they spun off and created a not-for-profit operation. So we're a 501c charity, and we're really around advancing our mission of safe living and working environments. And my role is workplace health and safety, and focusing on that part of the mission related to workplaces and people to really keep them safe on the job.
So how did you get started in all this?
So long history. We go back to I spent 17 years in insurance. And the last part of that
role... We're not going to hold that against you, okay?
No.
That's not against you.
Absolutely. The last part of that role was responsible for workers' comp insurance and really dealing with the escalating costs of the workers' comp arena and how were we going to start to impact that. And it really got to me thinking about different ways to manage that process. And, you know, as we talk about insurance companies, their way to evolve and start to look beyond where they're currently at. And it really led me down the path of branching out and looking at software businesses And the latest was a company that was acquired by UL about 3 years ago, and that's where I landed where I'm at today.
And so UL, you guys are – it's more than what you used to be, right? I mean, the safety side of it, help us understand that part of the organization.
Yeah, so we're a safety science organization. Really got our starts, our roots started around 1893 with the Chicago World's Fair. And the introduction of electricity, there was this guy named Tesla and this guy named Edison. You may know them.
Yes, I've heard that before.
The introduction of electricity was causing fires and burning down buildings and definitely impacting people's safety. And the underwriters actually reached out to our founder, William Henry Merrill, who was an engineer. I think he was in his early 20s, and really engaged him around, you know, safe use of electricity. That started UL, obviously we're known for product safety, fire safety, electrical safety. And over the past 5 years, I think, is we've acquired about 35 companies and really started to expand our portfolio. And one of those acquisitions was in the area of workplace safety.
And so what's your guys' goal? What do you want to do? What are you out to do?
So really, it's impact safe living and working environments for people globally. You know, we're an organization of about 12,000 workers, employees. 10 years ago, it was primarily U.S.-centric business. Today, it's mostly outside the U.S. Over half of our staff now works outside the U.S., really working on product safety, fire safety, electrical safety. How do we bring safer products to market, keep people safe while they're at their workplaces, and really start to expand that into other venues?
So what's that look like on the workplace side? Well, are you doing record keeping? Are you doing safety management systems?
So my emphasis is covers three areas. It's research, so we can talk about research, but it's research into workplace safety. The aspects of standards, so we're a standards writer. We have about 1,400 standards that we've written over our history, and we're starting to branch into workplace safety. We can talk about one of the standards we're working on now. And then advocacy, so outreach. So trying to look at, you know, through public speaking, sponsorships, those sorts of things to really start to expand our brand into workplace safety, not only within the U.S., but outside the U.S. The company that was acquired was focused on safety management software, e-learning software, and occupational health software. So it's a software business primarily. But my role is, you know, above and beyond that and really trying to expand that into other venues and markets.
So let's start with research. Tell us about the research side of it.
So we're doing a lot of research. So this role that they created for me was about 18 months ago. So relatively new. One of the things that was of interest to me is a lot of the work that you and I have started a long time ago, this aspect of learning and how do we...
Yeah, we should probably tell them that we've known each other a long time. In fact, this isn't a podcast. This is a Toddcast.
Exactly. So it was the expansion of learning, but the other part of this dates back to my responsibility for insurance and specifically the work comp business. We had about a $2 billion portfolio for work comp, and losses were stagnant, so we didn't really see improvements. We didn't see the aspect of them getting worse necessarily, but we did see the aspect of the demographics, the workers themselves impacting losses. We really started to focus on aspects of the health component within the limitations of the work comp system and the aspect of safety. And, how can those organizations work together? What we focused on, and it's work that I've done with Vanderbilt University over the last 4 or 5 years working down in Nashville. And there was a researcher there that was aware of Decker and Reason and some of those guys that we all know. And he was really trying to break down safety and bring it to smaller and medium enterprises. And so we actually had a workshop there one day, and I was in the own graduate school, and I ran into him, and that's how we met, because I had a pure safety shirt on. And he's like, well, what do you guys do? And we started talking about it. And we started, really focusing on this learning component. And so last year we convened a group of 40 stakeholders the stakeholders covered a gamut of groups. We had CEOs, COOs, and presidents. We had academia, so we had Vanderbilt, UC Berkeley, and MIT in the room. We had chief medical officers, we had chief safety officers, we had risk managers, and then we had a group that I called interested parties. So we had NIOSH, we had insurance companies, and associations. And we surely, in the focus of that first session was the aspect of, from a CEO's perspective, the C-suite perspective, how can you improve workplace health and workplace safety through the eyes of their through their framework? And so that was the first session we performed, and one of the outcomes there was this aspect of integrating health and safety. It's not a new term in the marketplace, but we felt that there was an opportunity to really expand on that and start to impact it.
Tell us more. What did you guys come up with? What's coming out of this?
So, it's interesting. We framed the sessions really around five breakouts. And the five breakouts are really our version of a learning model. So we looked at structures. We looked at the organizations. And, how should you structure the organization to drive improvements in health and safety? We looked at the aspect of noticing, what we call noticing, and that's really getting engagement from the workforce. The aspect of analysis or analyzing, once you have new sets of information into the workplace, how do you analyze it? How do you act on it? Dissemination, and then metrics.
When you talk about this notion of noticing, are you kind of talking about what they say when they talk about mindfulness?
Yeah, I think it's mindfulness. It's the aspect of, some of it's even simpler than that. It's creating a culture of early reporting where people can report without, fear of reprisal and get information in the system. When we looked at organizations, and this isn't new necessarily, but, some of the work that was done from TechDoc, the TechDoc that you reference a lot.
Yeah, TechDoc 1329.
We had... one of the individuals in the room was responsible for at least co-authoring a piece of that. And we looked at that mechanism. It's, how are people getting involved in the process and how are you learning from it and acting on it? And the whole notion of, waiting for an accident to happen, obviously, is too late and responding to it. And I think that, going back to the insurance world, is where we started to see the stagnation. So you look at organizations, and the insurance world is 20% of the business is churned, right? So you had a lot of turnover, about that 20%. And those organizations, if you look at TechDoc, we define those as reactive organizations. They're doing some of the accident investigations. They're doing some of the things that you'd want them to see. And then there's a core business that really doesn't turn over. We call them risk management, best practices organizations, about 70, 75%. But then the best organizations are really the ones that are driving improvements. Those are really the learning organizations. And what can we learn from them, and how do we drive that process? And that fed back into this learning model that we were looking at, but really starting to drive, how do we structure, how do we get people involved, how do we disseminate information? And some of the work that we've done together on the learning teams is a big component of that. And how do you start to get people involved, those at the sharp end of the stick that have the most knowledge of how to keep people safe on the job, which aren't typically engaged in the process.
So what are you seeing? What's coming out of the conferences? And you got another one coming up, right?
Yeah, we got the second one. We'll be again back at Vanderbilt in September. We pushed it back a few months. So we're acting on a lot of the information. So one of the takeaways is we talk about integrating health and safety, and we probably need to back up and just talk about why that's important to organizations.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
So the stagnation of accidents, I think it's you can see it in a lot of different arenas. If you look at BLS data, for example, or even look at your own accident performance, it may improve, but it pretty much plateaus over a period of time, over a time period. And how do you start to drive improvements? But what is undeniable is what's happening with your workforce, and specifically the demographics. And what crystallized it for me when we think about the health component, was a research project that I was involved with a large North American-based organization. And specifically, we had access to information that typically organizations wouldn't have due to HIPAA and other aspects. But we started to look at the components of specifically strains and sprains and looked at chronic diseases that the worker presented with at the time of injury. And so, again, strains and sprains that were that involve lost time and the cost associated with them, and individuals that presented with zero chronic working conditions, the average cost of that claim was about $7,000. If they had one chronic working condition, it was about $13,000. If they had two, it was $33,000, and if they had three or more, it was $90,000. When we talk about chronic working conditions, we're talking about hypertension, type 2 diabetes, smoking, obesity, overweight, those things that are common in workplaces today. And what we have to realize and understand with our organizations is that 50% of our workforce has at least one of those conditions, and of those, 50% have two or more. And so we think about the aspect of plateauing of accident rates, right? So they've kind of just hit a stagnant level.
Right, yeah.
And if you do have an accident, it's going to be more costly than it was last year or the year before. How do you start to drive improvements, and how do you raise relevance of the health and safety professional within organizations? And so this, again, led to the learning model, led to the process, and led to some of the outcomes. We followed that meeting in Vanderbilt shortly with a summit specifically with health and safety. So we had about 22 people, chief medical officers, chief safety officers. And there were really three things that we focused on. Number one was, again, supporting the why. Why is this important for organizations? The second part of this, which was critical for what I wanted to focus on, is how do you start to integrate health and safety? So really, what's the operational plan or the roadmap for integrating? And the third piece, and this white paper was produced and published in the Journal of Occupational Environmental Medicine in May, was a new set of metrics. And we identified 15 key performance indicators. But what we did here was unique, I think, is we aligned them with the Dow Jones Sustainability Index, specifically the economic, social, environmental factors.
Really?
With the aspect of health and safety.
Really?
Yeah. And so we have 15 new metrics. We published that report. We're out doing case studies now of organizations, small, medium, and even large. And we're carrying that work forward with a couple additional stakeholder groups. The Affordable Care Act is really driving healthcare organizations to adopt what we call total population health initiatives. Within that process, they need to identify, you know, how do they improve performance related to health and well-being of people within the populations that they support. And if you think about an adult person within one of those populations, a third of their life is at a workplace. And so how do you impact workplaces? And it ultimately leads you to this aspect of workplace health and safety. And so we're convening a group in a couple weeks to really start to explore that and create another roadmap related to that process. And the other thing which we think will be significantly will be a milestone in the industry and definitely start to elevate this to another level is the component of there's a large North American employer that we've engaged that has a 30-year-plus history of medical and health and safety performance for their workers. And they're going to give us access to their data. We're going to go in and study it and look at healthcare spend for individuals that retire with a healthy perspective and those that retire with an unhealthy perspective and start to look at that trend and how that accrues over time. And we've engaged the chronic working health group from the U.S. Senate and introduced them to the concept that we're working on. There's a lot of interest there related to that process. And so, again, we're looking at a number of stakeholders. How do we drive this, and really how do we support this longer?
This is a bold initiative. I would think, well, first of all, I think people are going to be really surprised to know UL's got a role in these these issues. And then secondly, I think you guys identifying that meeting place where health meets safety,
yeah,
is, it's an unrepresented population. I mean, I promise you, the vast majority of people that I talk to are much more concerned on the safety side, the industrial safety side of the equation, than they are on the health side of the equation. What's the diffusion like? Are people glad to hear about it? What are companies saying?
I think there's a lot of interest in it, but I think there's still questions, right? So how does this apply to me? How do I make this work within my organization? And that's part of the case study process. And so gauging companies, running them through the KPIs, doing assessments, doing interviews, and publishing those results, we hope to have information that organizations can point to, and more importantly, that those organizations become advocates for this process.
What, give me an idea of what some of the KPIs are like.
So some of them be traditional, right? So,
TRC and DAR rate, what do you mean?
We have one of those in there, yeah.
That would
be there.
But it's looking at the population health, right, and looking at percentages of your workforce and where do they fall within that process. We have metrics that you and I have talked about for a number of years, the aspect of getting people engaged, involved in the process, both from a health and safety perspective. And, you know, one of the trend lines that we're looking for there is that it's growing year over year. We're also looking at the aspect of what's being reported, what kind of types of conditions would be reported, and how organizations are really responding to that, which supports a culture initiative. There's a couple of CSR components in terms of engagement with the populations outside of the workplace. There's several facets to these metrics, but for the most part, they've been well received. And again, I think the key here is that the framework of most organizations and the responses is like, large companies, we could see them adopting this. How does it apply to small and medium employers? And our friend, you know him well, Dominic, we engaged him as one of the small and medium employers.
But Dominic does amazing work. And, you know, he was an early adopter of the industrial athlete. I mean, he's been out there on the edge at sort of where health and safety meet up. And he's coming from an industrial, God, you couldn't come from a much more industrial safety side of the house than Dominic comes from. What's he learning? What's he finding out?
Well, I think it's obviously these new sets of metrics. I don't think he went into the framework, 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago when he started the process, that it was an aspect of health and safety. It was just his DNA, right? What he wanted to do. But that process that he enacted and really getting management involved in supporting that has made significant improvements in their organization and even the well-being of their workers. We did no less than 30 or 40 interviews with workers and really started to capture their thoughts and feelings around this and their impact outside the workplace. So it's been amazing. But again, it's not something that he went into thinking this is what he was doing.
Did it impact? So we should give a little background. Dominic's a safety leader for a large, super kind of large electrical contractor. Fair enough?
Mechanical.
Yeah, mechanical. Sorry, Dominic. They all wear hard hats and those little vests. Has it impacted their actual industrial safety numbers as well?
Their numbers, and again, I think this is where the correlation challenge comes into place. They have gone, I want to say, he just shared the numbers with me, several million man hours without a lost time, and even a recordable case. I want to say it's 5+ years without a lost time accident. There is a correlation there. I think that's the work that we need to do and continue to work on. I will say that we also, unrelated to Dominic, but we've gone through and I think we're all familiar with the Good to Great book and some of the studies that were done there. We looked at organizations that participated in this award process. That's called the Corporate Health Achievement Award process, and it's been in place since 1995. And we went in and looked at organizations that scored well on health and scored well on safety and were publicly traded in their stock performance over the 12-year period that we were able to look at. and compared it to the S&P 500, and the results are astounding. I can't share the exact numbers because it's in the process of being peer-reviewed.
Top secret,
yes. But it outperformed the S&P 500 for organizations that were had a health and safety focus in excess of about 300%. And safety was even higher because, again, companies fell out related to their scores on health and safety. But it reinforces the aspect of this process. And think about the demographics of your workplace. And if you have better performance and safety, you're minimizing your costs long term, right? So it's not, again, causative, but there's definitely strong correlation.
Well, and you're right. I mean, correlation doesn't prove causality, but happier workers are more productive workers. More productive workers make more money. Safer workers are happier workers. I mean, you can see where it's all sort of carefully intertwined in some kind of performance or mission performance or performance excellence or occupational excellence. All those things really play in. Where do you see this all heading?
So I think we're going to continue the research that we're doing. I think the results of this large national employer will really start to raise relevance in the marketplace, as well as the study we're doing related to the stock performance. We're writing standards, so there will be a standard produced related to the integrated health and safety that organizations can go out and self-assess against and see how they're performing. There's a global aspect. We talk about the U.S. And kind of the numbers that we have within the U.S., but there's a global aspect to this. The more I engage internationally with organizations related to this process, they fully understand it and want to get involved with it. So some of the learning curve is going to be lower than what I thought engaging international companies. We want to do more research and more studies and start to drive stronger correlation to some of these aspects, but ultimately improve the health and well-being of workers around the world.
And sort of what do you see happening short term and long term for you guys? I mean, how can other people get interested, involved in this conversation? It's a pretty important conversation.
Yeah, so short term, we've launched a UL institute called the Integrated Health and Safety Institute. It's the first of its kind institute specifically focused on this. We think about organizations in the U.S. primarily. They either have a strong health focus or a strong safety focus. And I was fortunate enough to meet with several of their leadership teams back in February in a meeting. And we're talking about organizations ASSE, NSC, the American Association of Occupational Health Nurses, ACOM, the American College of Occupational Environmental Medicine. Those are your doctors. And the list goes on. There's about 17 organizations that were participating. And at the end of the day, the major takeaway I had is they're all focused on the worker, but they're all coming at it from different perspectives. They're either coming at it from the health perspective or the safety perspective. And the work that they're doing is important, but there's a void related to this integration process.
But I hear you saying it's more of a holistic problem. That's why the word integrated, I think, is really attractive to me and to you guys, is it's really not a worker problem and not a system problem. It's where the worker and the system meet together. And I would think somehow the impression people have for what health and safety is, the health side of it is very, it's almost silent. I mean, most of the people listening to this are driven by the safety side of it.
Correct. Yeah, and I'm a safety person by trade, right? So that's my focus. And, again, I go back to the history that I have in my profession and dealing with some of those aspects of the work comp system and what was driving costs. And then some of the studies that I was involved with and starting to see that aspect of the worker themselves and how that was impacting spend and impacting accident rates. So, it's something that we're excited about to be able to drive and lead. But we also anticipate having tools and resources that organizations can be able to consume and really start to drive their internal processes from the Institute. And the Institute will be driven by the UL mission as what we are in a not-for-profit and really start to expand and share the best practices and the resources that we're developing. So we're in our early stages of getting that thought leadership content compiled and out to the marketplace. But we really see that this is really it's the start of our journey and a longer process to unfold.
Where can people go to find out more?
So right now it's UL.com, and it will be the entry point. Literally, we launched this in June of this year, so we're in the process of building a web space for people to go to. We're going to be conducting 4 road shows later this year, one in the Northeast, one in Chicago, one in the West Coast, and one in the South. And we those will be road shows that are free to attend. They're roughly 1 day sessions to introduce this concept of the integrated health and safety to the marketplace, and the tools and resources we've created, as well as the standards that we're working on, and really start to engage the marketplace related to health and safety professionals. What are tools and resources they want to see coming out of this, so that we can go build those and share them with the industry to start to drive a more holistic process.
And if people want to contact you, how do they do that? It's a brave thing you're about to do here.
Todd.Hohn@UL.com, and that's Todd.Hohn@UL.com. And again, because we're a not-for-profit and it's our mission, everything we produce is available to the marketplace for free. So we're not out trying to sell anything or trying to produce anything from that perspective.
Sweet, sweet, excellent. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Let's talk more. You want to?
Sure.
All right.
So that was Todd Hohn, Underwriters Laboratory. What'd you think? There's a lot going on there, and I'll bet your mind was expanded. Your horizons were broadened. Yes, siree. Yes, siree. Little homework. If you've not read Tech Doc 1329, it's time. Just Google IAEA, International Atomic Energy Agency, and Tech Doc is spelled TECDOC, no H, 1329. The other thing I think that's interesting, and it kind of takes its roots from Tech Doc 1329, is this notion of safety moving along a maturity curve. So when Todd talks about his numbers, about 20% of the organizations are in sort of basic compliance, 75% are in best practice, and 5% are actually learning, that data is really interesting because it says a couple things to us. One, the challenge is on. Few organizations get to a point where they learn from themselves. If you remember Ken Phillips and the Grand Canyon Search and Rescue guys, you know, they're probably a 5% organization. They're constantly learning from themselves, yet they don't think of themselves as that 5% number, which is interesting and important. This podcast is a thoughtful discussion around where health and safety meet. And the question I think on the table is, are healthier workers safer workers? Is that right? Healthier workers, safer. I can't even talk. Safer workers. That is a good question, and one we ought to ponder. And certainly podcastable. Worth your time today, I'm sure. I bet you found this one to be great. I am smoking busy. Holy cow. I'm on a big, super difficult project now, so I'm a little tired. You can probably hear it in my voice, and you certainly can hear it in the way I'm talking. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. It was a great one. You'll hear more from Todd, I'm sure. Until then, thank you for listening. It is so cool that you're a part of this. Seriously, I can't do it without you. And you're really making this thing go, and that's exciting. As always, learn something new every single day. Have as much fun as you possibly can, and for goodness sakes, be safe.